Sure, and I don't write this chapter from the place of someone who has nailed it. No way. This chapter is for you, me, and many a millennial, because it is important for us all to rise up above judgment and the wronging of others who are not up to our spiritual par. We are courageous, conscious leaders. Let us collectively turn off our sirens, throw away the keys to our cuffs, and put away our megaphones. No one needs more policing, and you and me and we need to be spending our energy and time leading in the light. In your light. In the words of Abraham, don't freak out when people choose a lower flying disc than you. It's all good. But more accurately, don't freak out and judge when people choose a different story, vibration, or action than you. Live in the light. Go do your thing, homie. Go speak, teach, and live in complete alignment with what is true for you. But drop the wrongness of everyone else. It's so easy to bang on about what we're so against, but few live in the boldness of what they're for. Imagine all of the wild and free energies you could put towards your work if you didn't spend so much on trying to figure out why others don't see what you see. Imagine all of the possibilities that your energy could generate if you didn't try to get every single person on your page. You could be in the yes of your work and the yes of everything you teach and share. You can live in the yes of a big global awakening with as many people as possible who want to share your light. But you cannot live like that if you are wronging those who are not living on your latitude right now. Your light is your work. Do your work. It is the work of your soul, not the work of the entire universe. We must acknowledge that conscious leadership is not about changing the world. It is about changing yourself and changing your world, which consists of you and those who are being impacted by your work and all of the beautiful ripples that flow from the things that you do. So as passionately concerned as you are about climate change, your most powerful work isn't in wronging those who are not yet energetically available to the information that you know about the state of the environment and the impact of humans. Nor is it in judging the corrupt governments and companies that make you furious beyond comprehension. Homie, let me tell you, you are not even here to defend anyone, not even yourself. Everything is perfect, and so is your desire to heal the planet. Prince EA. That one statement changed my game. It helped me lighten up, loosen up, and realize that as serious as I can get about these big world issues, my job is not to fix anything. Instead, my job is to be in the joy, the privilege, and the alignment of what I believe. I am here to pursue what is true for me and my courageous, conscious work. Channel your desire to unwrong those who are wrong into a game of light tag. Do your work, speak your truths, create your programs, serve your people, write your Facebook posts, all in an effort to shine a light on what you care about. You don't need to justify, defend, or explain this light, but you also don't need to make others justify, defend, or explain their light, what is true for them, either. Your vibration is your greatest gift to this planet. So what if you could be in the privilege, the play, and the lightness of your work all the time? Even when it's deep and you're feeling human as fuck, can you put more energy towards your light than your fight? That energy of right versus wrong is so heavy, homie. And so is that megaphone you're carrying. It is a privilege to know what you know, so let your contrast feed your fire. The reason I get up every morning and work with as much fire as I do is because of the contrast. It puts a fire in my belly when I see the huge opportunities to help others. And what gets me hotter than ever is the opportunity to unify people and experience more harmony with our planet. And all I have to do is shine my light, find my vibe, and live in my tap. However, there will be days when I catch myself rolling my eyes, days full of wronging people like crazy in my head. And that is when I just pause, take some deep breaths, and ask myself some powerful, perspective-shifting questions. What am I choosing right now? What could I choose that feels better? What's easier, spending all of my energy on wishing other people would change and trying to control that, or taking responsibility for my own vibe? How much more fun could it be? What could I do with all this extra energy if I didn't spend it on trying to fix others? What am I choosing now? Tiring control or peaceful acceptance? Try those questions out yourself. Acceptance. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Rumi. We have all the energy in the world to work for what we believe in when we're not spending our energy on fighting those who don't believe the same. We are not here to be the grand jury of the universe, to decide who is right or wrong. Yet we take that job on voluntarily. Why? Do we need more jobs? Do we get paid for it? Unless you're a prosecutor or a district attorney or a self-appointed member of the consciousness police, then no. Choose something better and lighter. Acceptance. Acceptance acknowledges that it's not our job to wrong or right people, and that job is such a heavy one. When we choose acceptance, we choose to get our energy back so that we can actually go to work for what we believe in, whether it be climate change, the refugee situation, saving the whales, sustainable eating. An elemental part of your consciousness journey is the harmony between the ethereal, conscious, high up there stuff and the grounded, physical, emotional, mental, human as fuck stuff. Give yourself credit for the amount of personal, spiritual growth you've already allowed yourself to experience. And just stop here. Put your hand on your heart, give it a little rub, and say, kudos, me. Acknowledge how far you've come and how much more clearly you see the world now. Isn't that so rad? Isn't your new viewpoint so epic? Just appreciate that for a minute. Be in the gratitude of your journey, because not everyone is experiencing your amount of clarity. What a gift that you get to see how you see, right? Let yourself off the hook. Let others off the hook. Care, but care without policing. Lightly, homie, lightly. It's not your job to be the consciousness police. The universe has that job covered and doesn't even take it as serious as we do. Conscious leadership is calling us to rise above right or wrong. It's easy when we're so sure of what is right that we focus energy on who and what is wrong. Instead, live in your light. Use the fuel and fire from the acknowledgement of the contrast that inspires your work, and let it make your work even more of a light and a magnet to those you are meant to serve. And here is a pop-out. Everyone cares about different things. The vegan who refuses to use plastic bags at the checkout but doesn't know a thing about sex trafficking issues. The bricklayer who doesn't give a shit about meditating but fosters sick stray dogs. The school teacher who spends his days pouring love into our next generation of humans but drives a gas-guzzling car on the way home. The couple who gives a large percentage of their income to organizations helping children access their basic needs in Kenya but doesn't really know so much about factory farming. The mum who circulates old toys and clothes to less fortunate mums, but isn't really up to date about issues of race and gender equality. The young entrepreneur who works her ass off to earn great money so she can reinvest back into her community and build things that matter, but doesn't really give a shit about being vegan. I could go on and on. Just because something becomes our truth, it doesn't mean it's time for it to become the world's truth. Everyone cares about what they care about, and we don't all have to be as fiery about the same things. I wrote this Facebook post recently, a few months after writing this chapter. I felt it was relevant to back it all up, and my Facebook posts tend to be a bit more spicy and to the point than my chapters. I'm human as fuck, so bear with me. There's a chapter in my upcoming book called The Consciousness Police. It's a loving ass-kicking to all who are woke, conscious, aware as fuck, nipples made of crystals, or whatever other labels we throw on ourselves and others when we start to know new truths. Lately, I've been feeling like I don't want to use the word conscious anymore. I've seen more online bullying and hurtful language from people who really care about the world than from anyone else on my feed. Our fight for unity and togetherness sometimes feels more like a display of bullshit spiritual hierarchy. It can turn quickly from a rewarding, "This is the world I want to see," to a non-rewarding, "You're wrong and asleep if you don't get it." There are 8 billion people on this planet. The chance of everyone evolving at the same rate and arriving at your truth when you do is pretty damn slim. Everyone is doing their best, guys. Everyone is seeing through different eyes. Everyone has different stories. Everyone is here with a different soul's purpose. The person who doesn't give a shit about meditating or composting, but today is taking care of a stray dog, thank you. The sex trafficking activist, thank you. The school teacher, thank you. The foster parents, thank you. The doctors on mercy ships, thank you. The filmmaker, thank you. The artist, thank you. The volunteer at the homeless shelter, thank you. The yoga teacher, thank you. Those protecting the indigenous, thank you. The mum and dad, thank you. Those for equality, thank you. Those smiling today, thank you. The planet protester, thank you. The farmer, thank you. The entrepreneur, thank you. The author, thank you. The mad recycler and composter, thank you. The bricklayer, thank you. To you, thank you. My chakras are probably blocked all the way up to Jupiter, and there's a lot I don't know about so many global issues. But fuck, I would be without adrenal glands if it was my job to change the whole damn world while I'm here. The same goes for you. We're evolving as a team so freaking rapidly, guys. So how about we honor that for a wee minute? Regardless of what it is you care about, and whether or not you and I agree, I honor the shit out of you for doing your best. Thank you for caring. Unconditionally compassionate leadership. When the world goes low, go high. Leading the world. But first, a little PK aside. In 2015, I moved from Perth, Western Australia, to Scottsdale, Arizona. These two places couldn't possibly be any more opposite. My husband and then fiancé, Eric, is American. And with my work being more flexible than his, it just made sense for me to go. The decision was easy, and I moved over there with not much thought other than excitement and faith that it was the right decision. Little did I know that my soul was leading me into some of the greatest lessons and challenges of my life. I traveled to the USA before several times and loved so many things about it, especially how you could jump on a plane and in 90 minutes be in a new state that felt like a whole new country. Living there was a whole different ballgame for me, and that's exactly why my soul included it on my journey. In my new home, I felt like this free-spirited Aussie was being put through an emotional, personal, and spiritual tough mudder course. I knew the USA was more religious than Australia, but never did I expect to be called Satan for using the word universe. I was publicly shamed for using swear words in my posts. I was personally phoned to be told that I've had several complaints, and can you tone it down, after I wrote a simple post about how crazy I thought it was that we celebrated Thanksgiving on Thursday, and less than 12 hours later, Black Friday flips us to incessant consumerism. And, go back to Australia, bitch, wasn't uncommon. Not only did I feel wronged, I felt confused by the dynamics of this country and super challenged by how big it all felt. What didn't help was the fact that I moved over just as Donald Trump was beginning his campaign to be the president. My husband would remind me, it's not usually this much of a crazy circus here. But whenever I was in a waiting room, there was Donald Trump talking about grabbing pussy, staring back at me on the TV. Or there was a story of a shooting. A shooting? Why are there even guns here? There are no shootings in Oz because there are no guns in Oz, is something I thought of daily. Conversations with people about how they went hunting, killing 5 deer, had me in tears. I felt super defensive of Muslims who were being targeted because of what was happening in the Middle East, and was constantly telling my husband how one-sided the news on the Middle East was. As an empath, I picked it all up as if everything going on in the USA was a job for me. I felt tired. I felt sad. I felt misplaced. It just felt so separate. It just felt so intense. I hated it. It felt like I moved from relaxed paradise to a circus of crazy energies and insane separation. I cried most weeks, telling my husband Eric that I wanted to go home. This is not where I'm meant to be, I'd tell my soul. It is, she'd beg back. Why? I'd beg back. I felt like there were so many separate teams in the USA, and I wasn't on any of them. But the truth was, I had picked a separate team. How can these crazy religious people seriously think their way is the only way? I can't look at Donald Trump. How can people actually say they're compassionate and then go and kill deer and put it on their Instagram? Fucking gross. How can people glorify war and be so naive as to what's actually happening in the Middle East? I was team consciousness, and I identified with someone who wanted peace, unity, togetherness, and love. I saw myself as being pretty awake and aware of the bigger picture, what was most right for the world. Sounds pretty positive. Feels pretty good, right? But here's the issue. It was still a team, separate from the others. I continued to do my work, create big events about the new way, mentor millennials, give to charities, speak messages of light at big corporate events. But that stuff came easy to me. Leading in that way came easy to me. I was being challenged to step into a new realm of leadership that was bigger than just my work, more impactful than my events, and more important than anything I said online. I was being invited higher to drop any unrewarding and bullshit thoughts of spiritual superiority or classes of consciousness and to lead in a way that really challenged me. To lead in a way that most of the world's leaders were not, and to lead in a way that I previously had not been. Unconditionally compassionate leadership. It's called unconditionally compassionate leadership. So I tried it. I tried unconditional compassion on. It really fucking challenged me. When I witnessed people comment in a way that would previously have me thinking, "How can you be so ignorant?" I'd try compassion on. Soon, I got a little better at it, and it started to feel good. I practiced phrases and thoughts that went a little like this. Insert name here. Was raised totally different to me. Insert name here. Is doing what they feel is right. I know what it's like to do what I feel is right. Can I understand others doing the same? We're all doing our best with the tools we're given. Imagine all of the experiences, insert name here, has had that are different to mine. Insert name here, is doing their very best. Isn't it beautiful that all humans are doing their best? I loved how it felt when I tried compassion on like a coat. Compassion felt good to me, even when it was hard. I started asking questions when previously I would have silently judged. So tell me how you feel about the war. Explain to me, what was it like growing up? What do you care about more than anything? What did your parents teach you? And my favorite, what sort of world would you like to see? I learned that almost everyone wants peace. We just all have our own ways of believing we're going to get there. My friend recently got really mad at an NFL football player who knelt during the national anthem. He knelt to stand in solidarity and show respect for African Americans who had been victims of police crimes and just awful ongoing racism. My natural response to this is, fuck yeah, what courage that takes. I think it's beautiful and important that people with a big reach make statements like this to bring awareness and love to chronic issues like racism. My friend, though, was disgusted. Before I started practicing unconditionally compassionate leadership, I would have just argued with him and felt bothered that he didn't get it like I did. Instead, I asked him, "Tell me what it means for you when someone kneels during the national anthem." He said, "I saw people go to war and fight for our country, come back in their early 20s, shitting in a nappy and needing full-time care from their parents again." "I understand," I said, and then he went on to explain. "I just think that you can make a stand for what you believe in, but it doesn't have to be during the national anthem, which honors the people who died for our country," he said. While I still agreed with the guy who knelt, I completely understood my friend's view, and I'm so glad I asked. That's what unconditionally compassionate leadership is about. It's about understanding, not agreeing. Everyone is doing their best. Think about the people in the world who piss you off, bother or challenge you the most. The ones who can take you out of a good mood in 0.4 seconds. Whether it's something so small, like the old lady driving in the car in front of you at snail's pace when you're already late, or a politician with orange hair signing an order to dig into sacred land. Remember this. Everyone is doing their very best. My husband and I always remind each other of this when we're on the verge of a big old rant about Mr. Rude or Mrs. Nasty, and it instantly helps us feel better. Every human being is doing their best. Doesn't that feel better? Unconditional compassion is so much easier than trying to calculate whether or not someone deserves it. So, put your Excel spreadsheet and karma calculations away. Do they deserve it? Is not your job. Love is. Compassion is. Imagine the lightness of our planet if we all put our karmic calculators away. If we stopped trying to play the role of consciousness police. If we quit trying to take the management position away from the universe. Imagine if we started doing what was in our soul and began to practice what came through our free-flowing tap. Radical compassion is our next big generational job. We are not all going to be Mother Teresa tomorrow, and this work will not come easy, but we are ready and able to move in that direction. Many of us conscious and courageous leaders are already moving in that direction. We can either be karma physicists or we can be next-level conscious leaders in the new way. It's tough when you care so much, when you're a fiery human who wants people to see what you see. It's tough when we've been taught in so many ways that some people are deserving of compassion and some aren't. But that mentality halts the growth of our generation. You don't have to be best friends with people you hold compassion for. You don't have to see them, invite them over for dinner, or go rollerblading with them. But the compassion you feel in your heart for them will be what changes the world. You will be shifting the energy, sending out your high vibes, and being a courageous and conscious leader. Everyone is doing their best, even Donald Trump. When the world goes low, go high. 3 steps to unconditionally compassionate leadership. Number 1, try compassion on. Ask whatever questions or state whatever reminders you need to so that you can soften and humble your heart and be understanding, not agreeing. And use the examples of phrases and questions I shared before. Number 2, speak up, but with your compassion coat on. Once we have our compassion coats on, we can continue to do our work. But we're speaking, writing, and creating with a stance of, this is what I'm for, and not, this is who and what I'm against. Our tone changes, our intention changes, and we've got the benefit of being a lot more spiritually mature. Sometimes it's time to speak up and voice your opinion, other times it's not. Which brings me to the 3rd step to unconditionally compassionate leadership. Hold space. What do you do when you don't have anything to say? Just be the vibration you wish the entire world would be on. Sometimes it's your job to invite the world up with your vibration, not your words, Facebook posts, or protests. And now a pop out. What do we do when we feel like shit is hitting the fan globally? Terrorist attacks what feels like weekly, news that makes antidepressant drugs the new black, abuse of our earth. What do we do? How can we make it better? What do we do when we're so mad and frustrated at our political leaders and lack of love and compassion we see destroying innocent lives? Do you ever just have moments like that, when your blood is a mixture of anger, helplessness, and confusion? I wrote this Facebook post after a moment like that, after asking myself, what can I do? Leadership isn't always about speaking out and having bold opinions when others do. Sometimes the most courageous and necessary thing a leader can do is to shut up, go in, and ask, what's really required of me now? Last night I went to bed in tears after reading about the 30-plus beautiful people killed in Baghdad. I was just so fucking over this merry-go-round of blame, separation, brutality, and ignorance, and so frustrated by the feeling of not knowing what I could do. My husband, while trying to cuddle a pregnant lady curled up in a rock-hard ball having a sook, reminded me of something I shared in my opening of the New Way Live in Sydney last year. If you really want to change the world, don't let anything you see rob you of your smile. I said to him during my sook, it's easier said than done. But it was my own advice and I needed to chew it up and eat it. There is no one country to blame, not even a sleepy president we can all point the finger at. The world will know peace when the collective vibration demands it, period. While these attacks are still going on in our home, whether it's Manchester, Syria, Baghdad, it's a clue. It's showing us the direct result of our collective vibration, including yours and mine. We are not separate. What goes on in your country is not separate to what goes on in that country. If you really want to be a leader during this time, pay attention to your frequency. Pay attention to your attitude towards the people around you and in other countries, religions, and political parties. Pay attention to how and who and what you routinely judge. Pay attention to the thoughts you think and the feelings in which you spend most of the time. What the world needs right now are people who can rise up and hold a frequency that many are unable to reach for. We don't need more opinions, judgment, and, well, my country is safe, so... We need people who can take radical responsibility for their own frequency, even when it's 10 times harder than posting that tempting, low-vibe rant on Facebook. When the world goes low, we need to go high. I'll say it again. The world will know peace when our collective vibration demands it. While there are still things going on in the world that upset, horrify, confuse, and anger us, it's not our cue to rant. It's our cue to go higher. Be a renegade for Team Earth. That's the answer. You're equipped to lead. And by lead, I'm not talking about standing on stage and preaching to millions or becoming the next president or prime minister. Unless you want to, then you go, Glen Coco. I'm talking about you living in the new way and leading by inviting the world into new standards through the space you hold, the things you do, and the vibration you emit. So how do we go high when the world seems to go low? We take responsibility. If my vibe was an energetic text message to the world, what would I be sending? How am I responding to the atrocities of the world, the things I disagree with? Where am I still judging people who don't agree with me? And then we remember that everyone is doing their best, that we are so privileged to be here now. And then we trust. We trust that all is well. When we give a shit about our world, we can get pretty fiery. But the earth isn't hiring us to agree. She's hiring us to soften. Unconditionally compassionate leadership is about understanding others without needing to agree with them. When we try compassion on first, we lead the world to a new relationship with each other. All is well. Even amongst all the craziness, all is well. Leading the world. Do you not watch the news? How can you say all is well when people are starving? Chemical weapons were just dropped in Syria. And have you heard who's president of the United States? All is well. How can you say that? Aren't you paying attention to the vaccine arguments and reading the research that's coming out about it? Haven't you looked into the sky recently and seen the chemtrails? Have you seen the size of GMO avocados in the supermarket? All is well. Are you serious? Did you see the shark attack on the news last weekend? Didn't you know there was an outbreak of Ebola? Didn't you hear about North Korea's threat to bomb Australia? All is well. Can we be aware of everything going wrong with the world right now while reminding people of what's going right? This brings me to Peter Diamandis. He's an international pioneer in the world of innovation, including space travel and human longevity. He has more companies than I can count on one hand, and they all blow my mind for how progressive they are. Taking people to space, extending the healthy human lifespan, transforming entire industries to solve humanity's biggest challenges. He, to me, is a legend. I ran into him at the Montage in Laguna Beach recently and ran over to him like the unabashed fangirl that I am. He remembered my name. Maybe because it's the same name as his, only with an A on the end. Or because he's a genuine badass who understands people and loves to connect with them. Regardless, he's rad. And even though he is well-read, super-educated, and completely in touch with the state of the world, he reminds us that all is well. Here's the reason. It's easy to borrow the story of fear and the world is so fucked up. It doesn't take any particular strength to do that. Just watch the news, gossip with your friends, and share statuses on Facebook about all things grim and atrocious. But if you were to ask Peter Diamandis, who has two young sons, whether or not he's worried about the future, I'm quite certain he'd say no. I'm on Peter's email list, and even though his emails go to the updates section of my Gmail, amongst many others, I always pull his out and read them top to bottom. Often his subject line is something like, "The world is still better than you think." And the body of his email? Reminders of everything that is progressing in the world. His focus is clear, forward, fresh, and incredibly inspiring to me. I'll share some direct stats from his emails and website with you. Did you know? In September 2017, the government of Finland announced a partnership with Moni to create a digital money system for refugees. This allows people to participate in the economy and rebuild their lives. Life expectancy. Just 100 years ago, a child born in India or South Korea was only expected to live to 23. Today, in 2017, India's life expectancy has tripled. In Bengaluru, researchers at the Indian Institute of Science are fighting deforestation with camera-equipped drones that drop seeds in areas they otherwise wouldn't be able to explore. Their goal is to seed 10,000 acres in the region. More people around the world have access to electricity than ever, and the absolute number of those without access to electricity is dropping, despite population growth. Globally, 18.6% of the population was undernourished in 1991. In 2015, it had dropped to 10.8%. Over the last 30 years, the share of the global population living in absolute poverty has declined from 53% to under 17%. In the last 16 years, the number of children working in child labor has been reduced by more than 50%. As we head to a world of low-cost robotics where such machines can operate far faster, far cheaper, and around the clock, the basic rationale for child labor will completely disappear, and it will drop to zero. In the last 25 years, under 5 mortality rates have dropped by 50%. Infant mortality rates and neonatal mortality rates have also dropped significantly. In the US in 1820, the average person received less than 2 years of education. These days, it's closer to 21 years of education, a 10 times improvement. Within the next 20 years, the best possible education on Earth will be delivered by artificial intelligence for free, and the quality will be the same for the son or daughter of a billionaire as it is for the son or daughter of the poorest parents on the planet. Global literacy. Rates have increased from around 10% to close to 100% in the last 500 years. This data was taken and quoted by diamandis.com and in his email, The Abundance Insider, October 6 edition. I just want to remind you of the progress we are in fact making as a whole and the direction in which we're moving. How different does it feel to focus on what's going right? This is our work, and just because we have work to do, it doesn't mean that everything is going to shit. And it especially doesn't mean we should forget 3 of the most important words of a courageous leader, a new superhero. All is well. When you remind yourself and others that all is well, you are standing on the side of the universe and not against it. Think about it. If you truly believe that all is not well, are you sided with Source, God? Are you trusting of Source? Are we putting our faith in each other and in the earth? All is well is our way of siding with Earth, siding with Source, and siding with each other. When you hold the perspective of all is well, no matter what, you're choosing a vibration more similar to Mother Nature's, and the world responds to that. It shifts. People smile. You smile. People lighten. You being in all is well invites all people and beings to stop focusing on the constantly negative news, pretending that our life here isn't as magnificent as always, and be in the acknowledgement of the privilege it is to be here at this very game-changing time. All is well is not an ignorant stance. It's the most rewarding, magnetic approach we can take as people on a mission to raise the vibration. It may seem a little crazy right now on Earth, but that's what happens as new consciousness emerges. We're equipped for this. You're equipped for this. Yes, climate change is so damn real, but we know what to do, and our world is full of people who care and are willing to change. Consciousness is tilting in our favor. So all is well. Yes, homelessness and starvation are real, but but we are brilliant humans who give a shit, and it's a priority for so many, and we have what it takes to completely eradicate it. So all is well. Yes, crazy people are being elected as presidents. That has us all wondering when Ashton Kutcher is going to yell out and scream, "Punked!" But craziness shakes people up, snaps them out of inaction, and brings them together. So all is well. All is well because you are here. I am here. We are here. We are living on the most nourishing, supportive, patient planet, and our time is not up. There is nothing dished up to us by the universe that we are not equipped to handle. This is our work. If you have the hardcover or ebook, you'll see that there's a crossword for you to apply everything you learned in this section. Super fun. Section 3. Earning. Money is our teammate and business is our portal for creating conscious change for our earth and all people. Money is like water. It can be a conduit for commitment, a currency of love. Money moving in the direction of our highest commitments nourishes our world and ourselves. Lynn Twist. Creatively earning is the element of the new way that is all about redefining money and business by recognizing the spiritual bosses of our companies, rewriting your money story so we can upgrade the collective money story, and lacing consciousness and soul through the DNA of everything we create. Conscious enterprise. Money is our teammate, business is our portal. Business is the only mechanism on the planet today powerful enough to produce the changes necessary to reverse global environments and social degradation. Paul Hawken. Business and money are two of our greatest teammates when it comes to our pursuit for a more conscious, unified, awake, and love-filled world. Fact. Doesn't shit just sound so much more compelling when you tack fact onto it? Yeah, I thought so. But yes, even for the hippies, the hyper-conscious, and those who tend to shy away from these more masculine-appearing, keyword appearing, aspects of evolution, business and money are two of the greatest opportunities we have to better our world. We are being asked right now to not ignore enterprise and money, but, instead, to rewrite the current collective stories and methods of business in order to invite them into a more conscious game that rewards our planet and more of our people. We call it the new way. This is why spiritual people get into business, because business holds the power that catalyzes the change they want to create in the world. Don't be fooled. Money is power. We can shy away from it, judge it from our spiritual high horse, or we can step into this arena with our big hearts, our bountiful intentions, and our fierce protectiveness for our Mother Earth and change the game. Money is power, and it's calling upon the superheroes of our generation, the team members of the new way, to use money to create and collaborate for a reason. Look around and you will see the millions of hungry entrepreneurs who are creating epic shit in alignment with the vision of the new way, because it is our time to rewrite the story, recreate our impact, and reclaim our planet. The rise of the entrepreneur is not egocentric, but soul-centric. We are here to be divinely inspired, creative, loving, and revolutionary. Creatively earning is an element of the new way that shines a light on how our generation is doing business differently and treating money differently. How we can create epic shit through conscious enterprise and art, how we can replace old systems and companies that no longer serve our planet, and how we invite the collective into a higher, fresher way that does reward our planet. The spotlight is on money, and not just money as we know it, but what we of the new way call conscious money. For that is what all of the light workers, aware beings, lovers of love, and conscious leaders want. From money and business to nurture and nourish our planet and our people. There's some really cool pictures I've drawn, hand-drawn in this book, particularly in this area of money. So make sure you grab either the ebook or the hardcover so you can have the pictures that support this content. As we begin this journey into the business of the new way, let's first focus on conscious enterprise. We'll get to money a little later. Now, I am going to use the word entrepreneur a lot, but business terms aside, know that this section is for all of you creatives, artists, business owners, mums, dads, authors, yoga teachers, poets, painters, fashion designers, speakers, employees, food gurus, rock stars, bricklayers, and number crunchers. This is for any of you who are interacting with any sort of community each day, online or offline. You are creating something, which is equally as relevant to the world, regardless of whether or not you consider yourself an entrepreneur with a Shark Tank-worthy product. You are creative. You're here. You're playing the game. This is for you. All of it. And all of you. And now, a little sacred geometry to help you understand conscious enterprise. Whatever it is that you are creating right now, whether it's a company, a brand, a blog, a product, or any form of art, you are creating a hexagon. It doesn't matter if you're an entrepreneur, the founder, a contractor, one of the employees, or even one of the customers. You are contributing to one or more hexagons. Conscious enterprise is a hexagon. But why a hexagon, you ask? Picture a hive. Bees work together as a collective, one by one, forming their large beehive. Each bee and team of bees goes to work on one hexagon at a time. They fit each of the hexagons together like perfect puzzle pieces. They do this with laser focus until they've created something beautiful together, their home, their hive. One hexagon just won't do. One hexagon alone doesn't create a beehive. All bees with all of their hexagons must be working together and on the same page. All hexagons are part of the whole hive, which illustrates how we approach conscious enterprise in the new way. The hexagon represents every conscious enterprise on Earth. Each one is badass and unique, and they're all on the same page, fitting together to create something even more beautiful than one hexagon on its own. Your hexagon is part of our new, thriving home. You are the bee. Your team and your tribe are your fellow bees. You are building hexagons and you're cheering on other bees as they do the same. Each hexagon represents the company, movement, or organization that is the vessel for the future we want to create. Every enterprise is contributing in some way, big or small, to build a better world. This hexagon is the model that can help you, the entrepreneur, navigate the world around you and create a solid foundation for your business. If you have built castles in the air, your work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now, put the foundations under them. Henry David Thoreau. Every conscious enterprise begins as a vision, a castle in the air, because it's touching source. Then, when it's ready to come into being, to find a foundation, the vision will choose a human to start the building of it here on Earth, as we now know. In 10 years, we won't have to put the word conscious in front of enterprise, or say conscious business or conscious entrepreneurs, because in 10 years, almost all enterprises will be conscious enterprises, and all business will be conscious, and all entrepreneurs will be conscious ones. It's just evolution. We will be light years from where we stand now. So many of the big companies, corporate giants, and global brands that we've known of our entire life were built on principles and processes that were well suited for life as it was decades ago. The collective strain and pressure we were putting on our environment back then didn't seem as harsh. The demand for sustainable practices didn't seem as urgent. According to findings on ourworldindata.org, in 1960 we had 3 billion people on Earth, and in 2015 we had 7.4 billion. Worldwide population growth has naturally led to the establishment of more companies responding to the demands of more people, which has relied on us taking more from the Earth's natural resources to make the cycle go round. Unsustainable consumption patterns have been the common and accepted standard. Until now. The Earth is roaring back. We are now roaring back. Times, they are a-changing, and we, as the next generation, have more evolved standards. Millennials are soon to be in spending and voting power, and as a result, the world is going to see a massive shift in the way organizations are formed, businesses are run and built, and what companies affect. We millennials are creating conscious enterprises made by entrepreneurs and organizations who create and innovate in a way that is not only badass, brilliant, and rewarding, but also beneficial for our planet and all of our people. I need to share this quote again. Business is the only mechanism on the planet today powerful enough to produce the changes necessary to reverse global environments and social degradation. Paul Hawken. A few months ago, I was at a wedding in Palm Springs, and I spotted a soulmate, S-O-L-E-M-A-T-E. Right there underneath a woman's high heel was that clever, clear plastic attachment that kept her heel from sinking into the grass. Shark Tank, I thought with a pang of excitement. I mean, I'm obsessed with the show, like seen every episode obsessed. I love nothing more than seeing entrepreneurs in their creative brilliance, in their innovation, and in their pure ballsiness. With a show like Shark Tank, we are able to witness the evolution of the values and standards of entrepreneurs and see people push the edges of human potential. Watching these people work from their tap gets me red hot and inspires the shit out of me. Sure, not every product on the show is the ideal product, but the direction the products and the people are moving in are incredibly insightful. There are clues everywhere that reveal the new way and the glorious rise of conscious enterprise. I see and hear more people pitching their products and business with a profit-sharing plan and a people-planet-profit model or 100% recyclable compostable materials. I see more entrepreneurs than ever stand by their company and their vision regardless of any deal they're about to strike if it doesn't align with the soul and spirit of their work, or what I like to call the chief entity, which we'll talk about very soon. And I just love how the entrepreneurs strut into the tank wearing jeans, chucks, with their natural hair and little to no makeup. I have yet to see one baggy suit from 5 years ago because we are in the new way, which has nothing to do with your outfit, your hair, your shoes, or anything about your outward appearance. Though I would not encourage walking into a meeting with Forbes in nipple tassels and hot pants. The new way is about radical alignment. The world of enterprise is all changing. It has to change. Not because millennials are throwing a tantrum and demanding that things be cooler and more hip, but the way we do things has to change because business either takes more from our planet than it's giving, or it gives more to our planet than it's taking. Business either moves us more towards radical alignment, collaboration, unity, equality, play, and a higher collective vibration, or it doesn't. That is why the ways we do business have to change. We have no choice but to move toward alignment. Sustainability, freedom lifestyle, and high-vibe work environment are not just nice words that make millennials froth at the mouth. They are practices, regulations, and standards that were built into our DNA when we were born. Our desire for new standards is not a selfish one. It's not a disrespectful one. It's not entitled or naive or privileged. Our desire for new standards is our divine intolerance to what no longer serves our world. We came into this world with refreshed expectations and a drive to ensure that the world holds true to them, because that's how we can ensure our children, a thriving planet, a community, and a team, which we call humanity, or Team Earth as I'll refer to it later, of which we can be proud to be a part. We're seeing this divine intolerance displayed as we see sustainable and responsible companies built with spirit and love, two such assets which had previously not been objective enough to be considered assets when it comes to building businesses. Not anymore. Not only are we displaying our divine intolerance by building companies, movements, products, brands, and organizations that are driven by the new way, but we are seeing the world respond. We're seeing existing companies change their packaging to make it recyclable. We're seeing them change their vision and mission statement to include more awareness about global issues and people outside of their customer base. We're seeing collaborations and abundance become more fulfilling than competition and scarcity. We're seeing work-from-home policies, extended maternity leave, free dress days, and permission for employees to work in funky cafes, because that's where they're in their tap. Big corporations can no longer get away with destroying our planet, because our generation won't let them. This is not a matter of, we are millennials, hear us roar. It's pure survival. We want our children to have a planet to live on, and we know that businesses as a collective force need to step up and modify practices and policies so that we are all moving in the direction of a thriving planet and team. We vote with our dollar. We know that our dollar is working for us 24/7. We know that where we spend our money matters. We know that's how companies thrive or are replaced, by the support they do or do not have from their consumers. So we are demanding more by spending our money where our hearts are. Listening to the hearts of millennials isn't just going to help big organizations thrive, it's going to ensure that they survive. Because us kids and our kids are made of different stuff. We're made of what we need to be made of in order to move our planet in the direction we need to move in, towards that sweet, sweet H word, harmony, where we're vibing at a frequency that is closer to Mother Nature than it is separate from her. A world where all people thrive, and a world where our work is bringing us closer together and not driving a wedge between countries or classes. Because we get to choose, why on earth would we move towards anything else? Conscious Enterprise is our bestie as we pursue our mission. Conscious will be the way of business. Our generation was born with a divine intolerance, unable to tolerate standards and systems that don't support the quality of the world we're here to create. Business is one of our greatest opportunities to give the world a new operating system that moves us closer to harmony between each other and the earth. Times are changing. Our generation is roaring on behalf of Mother Nature. And she is weaving her magic through us and the companies and creations we're building. The new way is here, and Conscious Enterprise is our jam. Just a small pop out here. So the next few chapters are all about entrepreneurship and business. And if this absolutely doesn't interest or apply to you, skip through to the areas on money and meet us there. And you absolutely won't want to miss that conversation. Invisible boss. You don't work for yourself. I work for myself. Have you ever said or heard anyone else say that? Have you ever posted or seen a post on Facebook or Instagram with a photo, any photo, and a caption that reads, "Today's office," or "Life is good when you don't have a boss"? I have said those words. I have posted that caption because for the first 6 to 12 months of my early entrepreneur days, which were in network marketing, I work for myself was my attitude. I thought I worked for myself, and I said I worked for myself, and I posted on social media that I worked for myself. That's what entrepreneurship is about, right? Working for yourself, having no boss. That was the life, right? I would wake up before the sunrise, even when I didn't feel like it, and work until nearly midnight, which is so unbelievably past my bedtime. I'd get on planes when I didn't want to get on planes. I'd keep my computer open when my eyes were burning. This was my job, and I was working for me, to replace my income and to free myself from any other obligations, so I could be working full-time. I was my own boss. I couldn't live under the constraints of the typical working life and financial stresses that plagued my generation. With my intense drive and insane work ethic, it sure didn't take me long to reach that point. I was free and never had to answer to a boss again. Yet, I kept working with an increasingly insane drive long after I was taken care of myself. Just because I didn't have a physical boss, looking over me, telling me what to do, I didn't quite feel like I was unemployed. I didn't feel like I was on my own when I sat down at my desk to work. Some days when I felt like stopping, it was like I couldn't, because I was being pulled by something so much bigger than anything I could imagine. I would hear random G-ups, like inspiring pep talks, and wonder where they came from. Sometimes they were motivational, like, how many more people can you support today? Sometimes they were instructional, like, fly 27 hours to Chicago and do a one-day event on conscious leadership. I could not understand how other people building an organization anything similar to mine had so much time off. It felt physically impossible for me to take time off. Forget physically. It felt spiritually impossible to take time off. There was a mission taking place, and I was being used as an instrument. It was just me, so I created my schedule, I got on the phone calls, I stood on stage, I planned events, I worked long hours. I sent all the emails, I set my own goals, yet deep down in my cells, I was beginning to feel that I was not my own boss. I had an invisible boss, who was not a mean boss like my old boss, who told me to do my hair better, eye roll, but an important boss who was pure and loving and certain, a boss who knew my vision better than I. This boss wasn't even someone I would call God or the universe or Source. This boss may have been sent by Source directly to me, but it was not the same being. I didn't know it then, but I had been working for a vision. Remember those from a few pages back? The visions that pick humans? Well, this vision had specifically chosen me to bring it to life, and thus had appointed me with what we humans call a mission. I wasn't working for myself at all. And this realization made my entrepreneurial life suddenly click. I understood business. I understood business and spirituality and how they were one. I understood the nature of ideas and the specificity and accuracy of the downloads and messages I had received, and that, oh my God, they really were meant for me. But most importantly, I understood two very crucial differentiations. Human and entrepreneur are not one in the same. And business and vision are not one in the same. You are not your business or your vision. There is a grand vision out there, a divine entity that has chosen you to bring it to life in the form of a business, a product, some magical art form, or a rad organization. You have been chosen specifically because you are the most equipped. But let's get one other thing crystal clear. You are not the boss. You can be the painter, the CEO, the founder, the creator, the author, or the baker, but you are not the boss. You have a boss, and you are never, ever working for yourself. That feels kind of good, right? You're not alone. It sure felt like a big breath out to me. You're not working for yourself can take on a whole new meaning. Back in the early stages of building Genius, my ride-or-die conscious enterprise, I had to let someone go, and I was struggling with it. Peter, the human, was ferociously loyal and felt terrible about letting go of someone who was a nice person and was doing their best. However, my business needed me to act. She simply didn't have the right competencies for the role, and we were paying her more than we were receiving in value. Still, I'm human, so I delayed having the really hard conversation, which would turn out to be the beginning of my hiring and firing journey. Peter, you are the ambassador for your business, my mentor said when we were discussing this firing conundrum on a call. Who else is going to do what your business needs if you don't? That was the question that changed it all. Thinking of myself, the ambassador for my business, synced up everything I was putting together about entrepreneurs, creators, artists, and anyone whose work is driven by a calling or a vision. Where else was I making decisions on behalf of me and not my business, I wondered. A week later, a test came. Both my personal and business credit cards were skimmed, stolen. Even though the bank caught it and alerted me almost immediately, and I shut them down, a small amount was charged on each. When I thought about the time and energy it would take to chase a few $100 down, I couldn't imagine spending my hours sitting on the phone with the bank and with detectives searching store videos. I had chased money down from skim cards before, and it hadn't been worth my while. When it came to my personal card, I decided that it just wasn't worth it. But what about my business card? This was the test. It wasn't a game-changing amount of money taken from this business account. But if I didn't get every single cent back on behalf of my business, then who would? My business can't grow legs and walk into the bank and demand the money. I am those legs. I am the legs the business grew to walk into the bank. And if it's not me, then who else can do this for my vision? I am selected carefully by my vision because I am equipped, and it was time to take that very seriously. I am not just the one bringing this vision to life through my business, but I am the one who is speaking up, acting on behalf of, making decisions for, and being the voice for my vision, because that is exactly what it needs. I am going back into the bank to fight for my lost money. I wanted to put on a cape. I am my vision's human. I am the chosen ambassador. This was not a mistake. I went into the bank and went through the entire card fraud process. Looking back, I suppose I could have had my finance team do it for me, yeah, but I wanted to do it myself. It all of a sudden didn't feel as painstaking a task as it used to feel. It felt good to respect every single dollar on behalf of my company because that's what my company would ask me to do if it could talk. Is it always worth spending time and energy to retrieve money if it's going to suck even more resources from you? I don't think it is. But we've got to make sure that when our company, entity, vision needs something, we're checking in and asking, am I making this decision on behalf of me or on behalf of my vision? Homie, whatever you're creating right now, remember this. You are the ambassador, the protector, and the decision-maker that speaks on behalf of your vision. No one else is. Your vision is already full and whole all on its own. But after scouring through the 7 billion humans on the planet, this vision shows you specifically